Communications disruption can mean only one thing: invasion.
You must contact me.
Negotiation? We've lost all communication.
Hello, cool Nexus and bad kitties. You're listening to CO Bibbles Babble Bubble, your favorite, I hope, prequels appreciation podcast. If it's not your favorite, that's fine too. We appreciate you coming here to stop by. I know the past four episodes of the show have been with wonderful guests. We had Brad Vollmer on, talking about Star Wars in the state of Texas. We had Zabologist, the wonderful Australian co-host of It's True All of It, talking about action figures. And most recently, we had a two-part episode on F1 and pod racing, where I was joined by Nikki Kumar of the Imperial Senate podcast. But I felt like we should take a little break from the host game and have just a nice little one-on-one conversation with yours truly and you, the listener. And by conversation, I mean you sitting there quietly while I talk to you, because I can't hear how you're responding, and this has already been recorded. Or it could be you yelling at your iPod or other listening device, because the stuff coming out of my mouth is total nonsense, and that's fine. I'm used to that. Speaking of people thinking that what I do is total nonsense, the Babble Bubble received its first ever one-star review, which, you know, if you don't make somebody upset, you're not doing things right. So I'm glad that we're here charging the way forward. I take that as a badge of pride. All the best shows out there have their fair share of folks who don't really like them that much. And so, you know what? I'm glad to be in good company. Anyhow, I feel like, you know, I said a few weeks ago that I did not want my show to be dedicated to the Clone Wars TV show, but it seems like anytime I have the chance to talk about it, it manages to sneak in, because that's just how good the Clone Wars is in right now. By the time this episode is released, we will just be 2 days away from the finale, the second to last episode, the penultimate episode just came out, episode 11 of season 7. And, you know, this is where we're at the point in the show where there is so much intersection going on between the Clone Wars and the Revenge of the Sith. Now, as I have mentioned in the past, Revenge of the Sith is probably my favorite of the prequels, if not my favorite Star Wars film altogether. But I've actually spent not that much time talking about it as I have with others. You know, I had sort of an Attack of the Clones focused episode earlier in the year, and with the pod racer stuff and kind of the zany characters that come out of The Phantom Menace, there's a lot of focus there. But I definitely want to spend a little bit dwelling on Revenge of the Sith, and we'll tie in what's happening in the Clone Wars at the same time. What's so great about episode 3 is that it is like a Shakespearean tragedy in its own way, its own right. You know, for most of us who grew up with the prequels, it was kind of the harshest film we had seen to date. If you watch the prequels as a child, there's not many movies that carry that degree of severity and just brutality in it that you can watch, you know? Because you're either watching your kid movies at the time or other blockbusters that were released around the same period of the prequels period. You know, you can look at like the X-Men movies were coming around, the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man, so on and so forth. And yes, sure, there's Lord of the Rings, and depending if you were old enough to watch it, because, you know, slightly targeted, older targeted audience there than Star Wars. But even if you had watched just the original Star Wars films before seeing the prequels, you hadn't seen just this punch to the gut. Obviously, in A New Hope, the Death Star blowing up Alderaan is probably the single worst war crime
in the Star Wars universe outside Starkiller Base when they blow up a bunch of planets in the sequel trilogy. But we don't necessarily feel for the death of Alderaan and all the good people there because we hadn't seen it. You know, we weren't familiar with who the people are. I mean, once you see the prequels in Rogue One and get to meet Bail and Tilly's, you're really sad that Jimmy Smits died. But it's more abstract. But what we see in Revenge of the Sith, I mean, that is just a twist in the gut. Because these are characters, I'm talking, of course, about the Jedi in Order 66, who we have gotten to know in the years leading up to that. And I'm not even talking about, oh, we got to know Ki-Adi-Mundi and Plo Koon and Aayla Secura better because of the Clone Wars show, be it the Dave Filoni one or even the 2D one, but the fact that just by popular exposure we had gotten to know these characters. Even if you didn't know Ki-Adi-Mundi's name, but you knew, oh, he's the tall man with the phallic head and the little goatee coming off it who's speaking when nobody asked him to speak. I've seen his action figures at Target, or I've seen, you know, the cool stuff he was doing in Geonosis, or in magazines, or in books. So even if you weren't connected with the character, it's a character you got to grow up with from 1999 to 2005, and he just gets brutally gunned down, totally helpless. Same with all the other Jedi I just named. Then you throw in, you know, ones who you have gotten to know, such as Mace Windu, you know, a little bit better, more familiarity there with a name like Sam Jackson and also more lines, and then it's even worse. And to see that it's Anakin who's the one who cuts off his arm, so that leads to his ultimate demise. So that's why, you know, I think it really is such a knife in the gut, unlike Alderaan, or even though it killed more people, I'd say unlike Starkiller Base, because you just see a bunch of strangers on Hosnian Prime get blown up. And that score in The Force Awakens is so beautiful, but, you know, you look, you don't know who they are. They died. Oh, a whole bunch of planets died, but there's still a disconnect. Order 66 shows us individuals as they have the moment of realization that their death's coming. Individuals who we love. And it also really pushes the concept of plot armor, because you go into that movie, and let's say you have seen the original trilogy beforehand, as most people had, and know that Yoda and Obi-Wan, they're going to make it out. So you feel safe, because you feel like, oh, my favorite two Jedi, they're going to come through this scot-free. You know, sure, they retire, they go into hiding, but they'll be fine. But you see the route that it took for them to get there, and that it's not just simply they lost, but that they survived Order 66 and went on a desperate last attempt to try to redeem what was left of the Jedi Order and stop Palpatine in his tracks, and they failed. Neither Obi-Wan nor Yoda succeeded at the mission that they set out to do, which was kill Palpatine and kill Anakin. Obi-Wan maybe thought he did at one point, but he didn't have the strength to, you know, make for certain the job was finished. And Yoda just accepted his defeat, knowing that Palpatine was more powerful and he was in a weakened position, and just that exile he puts himself into is just devastating. It's not retirement. It's admitting to a tremendous failure. And so it's not even seeing some of our favorite Jedi die, but it's seeing that the ones who survive have it so rough. There's no pat on the back moment like, yeehaw, I got it. I made it through. Whoosh. Close call. And that's where, you know, the books, the video games, the comics, the TV shows kind of fill in those blanks a little bit more to see how different Jedi react to it. So we see Jedi Fallen Order, what happens with Cal, And we see in Star Wars Rebels and A New Dawn in the Kanan comments what happens to Caleb Doom, later Kanan Jarrus, and so on and so forth. And even when you look at some of those original Legends books, like Darth Lord of the Sith, that was the third book in the so-called Dark Lord trilogy that opened up with Labyrinth of Evil, then the Revenge of the Sith novelization, and then Dark Lord, which was a great book that fills in that gap immediately after Order 66 and the foundation of the Empire. And you see, you know, there's these Jedi survivors that made it and are struggling with what to do, and that they don't necessarily have the same bravery that Yoda and Obi-Wan have, which is, you would not expect them to. Yoda and Obi-Wan sit on the Jedi Council. They're the, you know, the creme de la creme. They are the top of the top. So naturally you would imagine them to have what it takes to sort of say, here we go. But, you know, are the cowards really that cowardly? Or are they just sort of accepting the failure in a more immediate way? If that makes any sense. And I really hope that in this last season, or sorry, pardon me, this last episode of the Clone Wars, you know, Order 66 has just happened. We saw that Ahsoka has been able to, you know, get out of immediate clutches of death. And she's now teamed up with her fixed pal Rex, and Maul is running around crazily on a ship. You know, will that story focus on them, or will we maybe see a few other Jedi in the process, or a few other people who have been defeated along the way? And I mean that not just in terms of the Jedi or the Separatists because they lost, but, you know, the Republican senators. Will we get to see Bail Organa a bit? Or will we get to see maybe Mon Mothma or some sort of acceptance there? An introduction of maybe a Hera Syndulla or a Kanan Jarrus, kind of a more tie into Rebels. I don't know, and it's something that's very exciting. The execution of the whole Order 66 arc, and I don't just mean the literal execution of the Order, but the way that it was presented in the most recent episode, was beautifully done. And I have to say that, you know, just like the Phantom Apprentice episode with Darth Maul was really well performed with Sam Witwer, that's Maul's voice, I think Dee Bradley Baker did a great job in this episode speaking as all the clones, namely Rex, and his reaction and his own struggle with what was going on with that. You know, there's a certain degree of sadness, quite literally, as, you know, when he first gets the order and his programming is telling you to do something, a tear is running down his eyes. And you have to hope that he was not the only clone who went through that just because of his previous experience with Fives, that maybe, you know, the clone pilot that shot down Plo Koon had that moment, because we know how close Plo Koon was to his wolf pack. Or maybe behind that mask on Felucia, the clone commandos who shot down Aayla Secura, maybe had tears going down their face. You can take what's going through one character and put it on others. And it's the fact they're wearing those masks that leaves so much the imagination, that when you watch it, you picture, oh, well, they're so determined, they're stone cold. But after seeing this episode, you pivot, or at least I pivoted and realized there actually may be a degree of struggle underneath those faces. So I need to rewatch that scene in the movie. I actually rewatched Revenge of the Sith just the other day so I could see it before this Clone Wars release. But I think I'm going to rewatch it yet again and try to picture, is there a struggle, is there an expression of pain underneath those clone trooper helmets, as, you know, Order 66 has been asked for? Or at the very least, is there some sort of degree of, you know, acceptance but not pleased? Like, well, here we go. Almost like their eyes are looking away. It's hard to see, you know. I'm all thinking about this out loud for the first time as I'm saying it, and it's kind of funny to picture, you know, Ki-Adi-Mundi on Mygeetto, and all those clone troopers surround and shoot him. And I just imagine like a group of them sobbing, like, "We're so sorry. I don't know how to handle this. Pew, pew, pew," you know, making sure he's dead, because it's just like their rage at the situation is being projected there. You know, I think about how often, you know, sort of crimes of passion seem to be, you know, "Oh, I didn't want to do this, but look what you made me do." And it gets to sort of snowball effect in that type of way. Anyhow, there are plenty of other people this week, the next few days, who will be sharing their wonderful opinions on Order 66 and its execution in the Clone Wars. So I won't dwell on that much longer, other than to say that the use of that Blade Runner-type soundtrack leading up to it in the show was really neat. That, you know, and something that's as orchestral as Star Wars, given that's where John Williams vibes, to go to a more IDM, that's intelligent dance music for those of you who don't know the acronym, kind of an IDM sound right there, almost sort of Daft Punky in a way. But I definitely, Blade Runner first shows, wow, this is going to be different, because we got a different type of musical cue going on. So that was neat. I do want to now pivot to a point about Revenge of the Sith that I have definitely shared about in the past in conversations with people, maybe even on social media. And this is the idea that that movie really highlights just how powerful a person Darth Sidious is.
Go for Papa Palpatine.
And I don't just mean that in terms of his skill as a duelist or his skills in the Force, or even that, oh, he was the one who actually killed Padme and while at the same time keeping Anakin alive just long enough and turned around. You know, none of that. This just is solely on the skill of manipulation. So in the Star Wars universe, we see multiple times in which a big baddie tries to take a young, perceivably corruptible mind that has up to this point hung out in the light side of the Force and tries to bring him to the dark side, trying to turn people. It's a very common theme. And in watching this, you see that it only successfully happens one or two times, and that there's a far greater failure rate. Now let's look at these instances and let's grade them. We'll start with the most famous one, Darth Vader trying to turn over Luke. That's the first one we were ever introduced to. "Join me and together we will rule the galaxy as father and son." And that obviously doesn't go anywhere. Luke ends up throwing himself off the edge and gets rescued by his friends. And even though Vader keeps kind of pushing him in the elevator scene on, you know, in the following episode, Luke again holds strong and ends up being the one to turn his dad. Then we could look at Kylo Ren, as the one trying to turn. And he, on multiple occasions, tries to get Rey over onto his side. And similarly, he doesn't succeed. If anything, it's Rey who turns him around, brings him back to the light, just like Luke did for his father. Next, we'll look at Darth Maul. Now, this only exists more in the cartoon space, but, you know, we just saw in the episode before this most recent one of the Clone Wars, Maul tried to win over Ahsoka. And while she piqued interest, not to joining the dark side, mind you, just possibly teaming up with him, he didn't follow through. Because once she learned his intent, she backed off pretty quick. And then in Star Wars Rebels, Maul tries to turn Ezra with similar, no success. He actually does get Ezra's eyes to get a little dark and red looking at one moment and to tap into his dark side nature, but he does not become a dark acolyte, a dark Jedi, anything along those lines. So there we have four failures. Now let's pivot to the success. This is what we see in Revenge of the Sith. Palpatine's turn of Anakin. Now, what is it that Palpatine does that the other folks fail to do? Well, number one is definitely that it's a long play. In every single other instance, you know, the bad guy straight up opens up very quickly, hey, join me to beat this larger threat, or join me to start this new order. There's no sort of conniving or manipulation going on leading up to the point. Palpatine earned Anakin's trust. It's not like the first time they met. He met Anakin as Darth Sidious, and then immediately said, I'll teach you the ways of the dark side. No, he wouldn't have hopped into that. And you can see Maul tries to sort of imitate this when he introduces himself as Old Master and not quite as readily as Darth Maul, but he's unable to keep that facade holding up. But Luke obviously knows Vader's bad, and, well, you know, Rey has a negative opinion of Kylo from the get-go. So, it's you're missing that very key element straight from the get-go. The second point, and this is one that I would say most people turn to, is the whole tragedy of Darth Plagueis the Wise. And yes, folks joke on the internet that, well, you know, if only Kylo had told Rey the tragedy of Darth Plagueis the Wise, it would have worked. Obviously, it wouldn't have, because that story means nothing to her. But it's the idea that here you have a tailored tale to be the hook, line, and sinker for the fish you're trying to get. Palpatine has identified and even orchestrated Anakin's weakness to the point that he knows how to exploit it. And he's got the perfect story to tell. Everybody else, similarly said, just rushes to the table. And they don't offer, if you join the dark side, this is the thing I can give to you. It's either this is the power I can give you in a vague sense, or this is the liberation in terms of, you know, where you are in their training. Once again, I would say Maul in Star Wars Rebels does the next best job. But we see he's already failed with Ahsoka, so maybe he's had time to think about it for a bit. But doesn't quite fully succeed. He continues to offer more of the abstract, let's beat the Emperor, this is the key. Not, here is a specific desire that I recognize in you. Maul never says to Ezra, let me save your parents. Let me teach you how to keep Lothal safe. Vader never tells Luke, I'm going to bring Owen and Beru back to life. Or I'm going to ensure that Han gets taken out of Carbonite and doesn't go to Jabba the Hutt. Those bargaining pieces are gone because they never get to show themselves as an ally. There's not the problem-solution identifier. And so Palpatine succeeds with that beautifully over the course of Revenge of the Sith, though the seed was naturally planted as early as the Phantom Menace. The other successful attempt of turning someone dark in this way is by Kylo Ren being turned by Snoke, who, of course, we learn later, Snoke is just an extension of Palpatine in his own way, and there you go. And once again, it's done as a long ploy. You know, speaking to him in thoughts through the Force over the course of multiple years. Even getting involved with as early as him being in the womb. And then if you read the Rise of Kylo Ren comics, Kylo doesn't meet Snoke knowing he's the big baddie in the universe. He meets him in a beautiful garden who welcomes him with open arms. And so I think that's sort of the signature Palpatine play. Now, he has two failures too, one of them being with Luke, the other being with Rey. But I would wager that it's because two other people have tried and failed. You know? Luke and Rey have already considered the dark side possibilities. This wasn't the first time they were being introduced to them when he speaks to them at those times. Also, there's that whole being recognized as a villain bit. You know, Luke knows the Emperor is the big baddie, and Rey knows that as well. But still, you know, I look more at the Rey one than the Luke one. He does try to make an emotional ploy with, hey, you know, you're going to join the dark side by killing me. Kill me, which is your main objective, and you will fulfill your family legacy. This is being said to someone who felt like she hasn't had a family. So that just shows that Palpatine still has tricks up his sleeve. He just has a hard target and has more stuff going against him. But, you know, the performance by Ian McDiarmid as Palpatine in Revenge of the Sith is beautifully done and extraordinarily convincing. And I think that's what sets him apart as an all-time powerful villain. Because it's not just the crazy force lightning. It's not just the flipping around with the two lightsabers and the screaming and throwing the Senate around and manipulating politics. It's the ability to coerce people into your line of belief by coming in as a friend. A classic tactic. You know, it makes it very easy to believe, well, how did Palpatine manage to win over the Trade Federation so early on enough to tell him to invade Naboo? Because he played off as being their friend and about caring for them and for them to achieve something that they wanted. Hell, even when he sends Vader to Mustafar, to the Separatist Council, he chooses his words very deliberately. He says, I'm going to send Vader to take care of you. Even that's not a lie. It's just a double entendre. That take care can mean one thing or the other. It's funny because when Vader talks back to Palpatine, he does say the Separatist Council has been taken care of. So they use that phraseology. So it's kind of funny. I never really caught that until this most recent viewing, that there is that parallelism that they don't say dealt with or removed, just taken care of, which is exactly what he promised. It's like Palpatine overpromises and exactly delivers, but just in kind of his own twisted way.
The time has come. Execute Order 66.
Anyhow, those are just kind of the main 2 points about Revenge of the Sith that I wanted to talk about. Obviously, there's so many wonderful things about that movie that I could dive into thoroughly. The introduction of some great characters. But just as I try not to, you know, give up the entire pie in one moment, we're going to keep some of those good ROTS ingredients tucked away in the kitchen cabinet. There's one final point that I'd like to bring up in this podcast. And it's one where I have generally not operated before. And I know I'm often kind of goofy and I tell funny stories and stuff, but this episode's actually been a little more heartfelt, talking about why Revenge of the Sith means so much to me, and a little more, it's probably the most academic, put that in quotations, bit that you'll hear from me in a while. But I want to pivot to something more meta about the Star Wars fandom, and I really loathe getting involved in sort of the politics of Star Wars in terms of the community, because enough people do that already. And it's not that I'm not wanting to stir drama, I just don't want to necessarily draw attention to drama where drama is. So if you don't want to hear me for a little bit and think I'm hypocritical to talk about this, you can go ahead and end the podcast now. Thank you so much for listening. But I'm just going to say this sort of as vaguely as possible, and hopefully the message comes across. If you are a guy who likes Star Wars, and you see a young woman, or an old woman, or any woman, or even if you see another guy, or another person who likes Star Wars, that isn't a gateway to assume they want to have some sort of relationship with you other than a shared enthusiasm of the same collection of movies or material. You know, Star Wars is not like Zarathustrianism or some religion that requires you to date within it to keep it going it's ever growing externally. You know, it's evangelistic in the sense that new Star Wars is always, fans are always coming around. You don't need to to breed them with incestuous feelings. That sounds really bad, and, you know, I'm just articulating general frustrations. But you, a woman being a Star Wars fan, is not an open invitation for you to be flirtatious, for you to be at all creepy. And like I say, it goes the other way around. You know, let people just enjoy their thing and talk to them about a shared enjoyment of a subject. But you're not trying to talk to them like, yes, this is my way in. You know, there's been a lot of discourse of this on the internet recently. And like I said, I'm not going to be talking about anyone here in particular. But, you know, people just assume that, aha, you're on my level with something. And then another thing I want to throw out, and this may be an unpopular opinion, but, you know, I highly encourage that if you're a Star Wars fan, enjoy something else besides just Star Wars. I'm sure most of you do. I do, certainly. And I have a Star Wars podcast. I don't have a podcast for Pirates of the Caribbean or, you know, Battlestar Galactica. But have other things, or history, or piano playing, or reading, or any other things I have. Open yourself. Don't put all your eggs in one basket, and don't put your eggs all in one fan community. Because if that one disappoints you, it absorbs your life, and you'll get sucked into just disappointment. So have a network of friends, family, relationships who aren't in the fold. But you can share what you love about Star Wars with non-Star Wars fans, too. This doesn't have to be just, let's try to brag about who loves Star Wars the most, who's seen what film, how many times, so on and so forth. You know, there is a gold community in there of propping people up, not stepping on top of one another. Anyhow, this may just sound like a bunch of ramblings, but I've just seen, you know, in my tangential removal from all of this, I've seen enough stuff to just be frustrated and felt like, you know, I have a platform to share ideas. You know, they're not original ideas, thankfully. That means a lot of people are on the same page with me here, and that's great. And I hope that most of the members of the Babble Bubble family generally float in this same realm of agreement. And hey, if Star Wars is your thing, 100%, that's awesome. That is fantastic. I'm not trying to shoot that down either. But it's good to diversify a bit in its own way. Maybe this is unsolicited advice, or maybe it's just me rambling for the sake of rambling. I'd say I'd like to hear the sound of my own voice, but these headphones I'm wearing kind of muffle me a bit, so who knows. Anyhow, per usual, thank you for stopping by. This may be the first episode of the Babble Bubble that makes up onto Spotify, as will the rest of the show. That's exciting, so if you have a friend you've been wanting to get on a prequels podcast, but maybe they don't have an iPhone or just they don't like Apple Podcasts, then check us out there. C.O. Bibbles, Babble Bubble. Per usual, I'll catch you all around the corner. Bye.